Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams. Keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Welcome, folks, to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and we're welcoming back, by popular demand, our friend David Nabin, who is an author of Forecasting the Catastrophe, discussing probabilities of possible times for earthquakes to present themselves in California. And welcome back again, David. Nice to have you on the show again. And
thank you, guys.
It would be great if we can. Mike, have you got a.
Well, I want to give the website out. And this is only the second time in the history of Community Alert we've had a back to back double guest like this. And this is great. So, you know, there's some things. Well, there's just some things you can't handle in an hour, and it's almost as if you're leaving people hanging. And if we're at the end of the show and we feel like we've accomplished our task, that's great, but I think this goes into some other areas that are worthy of consideration and discussion. I want to get the website of the week out. This is the same as last week, earthquakepredictors.com. That's www.earthquakepredictors.com. And of course, the book Forecasting the Catastrophe, an analysis of when and where the next earthquake will on the West Coast will strike, available at amazon.com. So, Ted, pick it up from last week, please.
Well, David, maybe you could just give us a quick encapsulation of your ideas, what you covered in the book on earthquakes and how that our closed celestial bodies are affecting the way the poles are on the planet and that sort of thing. So let's hear it.
Well, as we talked about last week, to make it in a nutshell, to make it very easy to bring your listeners back up to speed, the theory is that certain near syzygy events where Earth, Moon, and Sun are aligned almost like an eclipse, a near eclipse, those were, if you go back and you look at the history of the great quakes that have struck California, they've all fallen within that very thin alignment where dawn and dusk, during new and full moons, kind of in an eclipse-like mode, have tended to focus gravitational tides more strongly on the San Andreas and pull it apart. Within the book, though, in Forecasting the Catastrophe, to give the reader a kind of an idea as to whether or not eclipses might am I the first person who will have thought of that? It turns out that if you go back into history, the mystery within the mystery in this book is that there is a long folkloric history of many peoples in many parts of the world connecting eclipses with earthquakes. And during an eclipse, that is when the greatest amount of tidal force will be put on fault lines, the San Andreas and others. But, the point being that I thought it was a good idea to take a look at the ancient wisdom and lore, because many times you find kernels of truth in things that on the face of it look ridiculous. And the point is that I found some interesting earmarks that connect with the Mayan calendar and the 2012 hoopla that is currently going on.
So, Richard, I think I'm going to let you pose the question, since you were the one that brought this thing up to us last week and precipitated our bringing David back for some more illumination. So why don't you talk to David a little bit?
Well, David, obviously when you speak 2012, you're going to hear those people going, oh, not that again, the nutballs out there. But then you're going to also have those who are going to go, oh, my God, the end of the world and it's all over. I mean, all you have to do is look at the movie. I want to keep it in the practical. I know that from an astronomical standpoint, what I have heard, I haven't actually been able to check this out firsthand, is that the planets are going to be in a certain alignment, which is going to change the magnetic of the solar system and so on and so forth, the gravitational pulls and what have you. So my question to you has to do with your probability/predictions that you gave us in the last program of May and June and August, and what about 12/21/2012?
Well, a little bit of history, but it's pretty interesting history. Let your listeners should be aware of a few things. Number one, there are only four books of the Maya around on planet Earth. Diego de Landa, when the Spaniards took over, burned every single piece of literature that the Mayans produced. And after the Inquisition was over, there were only four codices left in the entire world. One of them, the Dresden Codex, wound up in Dresden, which, after escaping the Spanish Inquisition, was firebombed during World War II. We all know what happened in Dresden. And that plucky little manuscript was found in the smoldering ruins by a under the boot of a Russian major who recognized its value and saved it from a second disaster. I'm not going to go into the arcane. The story having to do with that codex is amazing, but the long and the short of it is that once we realized what these what the Dresden Codex said, once the Mayan glyphs could be deciphered, lo and behold, it turns out to be an eclipse almanac, much like the one that I've written in forecasting the catastrophe. It turns out that the Mayans also, who were stunning astronomers and very apt chroniclers of earthquakes. One of their sacred, one of the days of their week, by the way, is named Earthquake. They have 20 days of their week. One of them is called Quake. It would be as if, you know, we have Saturday. If we were to disappear from the face of the Earth, any archaeologist would be able to take a look at our weekdays and tell very much about us. Satyrs or playful Roman deities that like to have fun, and they would guess that we had a Saturday for fun. They had a quake day. Of all the hundreds of thousands of things that they could have named their 20 days, one of them is called Earthquake, and of the four books that survived on planet Earth that they wrote, one of them is a dire warnings of eclipses. So since I put those two together, and I, of course, you bring the point to mind that the end of the long count would be the longest running earthquake prediction in the history of mankind. It's a 5,000-year-old earthquake prediction, which supposedly is going to come to fruition on 2012. That piqued my interest, and I did a little bit of investigating, and lo and behold, I found some interesting. There's a bombshell involved in this that has nothing to do with predicting earthquakes in California. Well, obliquely it does, but it's my opinion that the Mayan scholars should take another look at the long count calendar because they might have made a mistake. It might not be 2012.
Oh, boy.
In the beginning, it might
you
not
heard
be
it here first, folks.
That's right.
It might be December the 24th, 2011.
Mm.
It used to be December the 24th, 2011. Since the beginning, it was always December the 24th, 2011. The great Mayanists. Of the early century, Thompson and all the rest, the people who deciphered the glyphs, they always had appended it at December the 24th, 2011. If you go on YouTube, if you type that in, you can hear Rod Serling's iconic voice on nationally televised broadcasts repeatedly talking about the end of the world, December the 24th, 2011. It's been changed recently. And that's the whole idea. The Mayan calendar has been changed and rechanged and calibrated and recalibrated, and it's currently the accepted date ending at December the 23rd, 2012.
Do you have an idea why that happened? How that happened?
Because they changed the beginning, but the interesting thing is, and the segue to my book, December the 24th, 2011, it might have been discarded as the end of the Mayan calendar. You will find it in my book amongst my earthquake almanac because it is a near syzygy event, a very closely aligned one. For Southern California, December the 24th, 2011 is one of the 181 dates where that you might expect a higher seismic activity. The point being, I'm wondering, I'm conjecturing, if the Mayans, they wouldn't have known a thing about the tectonic plates, they wouldn't have known anything about the tides, they wouldn't have known anything about the science behind it, but they were unbelievably apt chroniclers of earthquakes and they were excellent astronomers. It's my conjecture that it's just possible that they may have noted what I have noted, that earthquakes tend to strike around the syzygies. They tend to strike right before, during, or after an eclipse or a near syzygy event. And they may have built that into the... it's a stunning coincidence for me that such a that this near syzygy event ends where the long count ends, where the long count used to end. And I brought that to the reader's attention. And for whatever it's worth, I'm asking some open-minded Mayanists, some open-minded scholars to open this chapter up and see if there's anything to it.
Well, very good. We're up to our next break here. Visiting today with David Nabhan. He's the author of Forecasting the Catastrophe. Available at Amazon.com. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the board today on Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. This is KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and available at the internet at newspress.com. We'll be back after these messages.
Welcome back, folks, to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams, and I'm visiting today with Mike Williams, my co-host, and we're visiting today with David Nabhan, who is the author of Forecasting the Catastrophe, talking about some ideas about when earthquakes are most likely to occur and how we can prepare for that. David, I just wanted to reiterate a bit about what we talked about last week. Since we are a disaster preparedness show, could you talk to us a little bit about preparation for earthquake and how the public can become more aware and what they can do to mitigate and rectify some of the things that earthquakes are going to produce?
Well, last week you had mentioned the last big one, the Fort Tejon quake that took place in 1857, and how it shook for 3 minutes, and the tops of tall trees beat against the ground. In the intervening time, I went back and took a look at some of the firsthand accounts. You know, Lake Tulare was jostled and sloshed around during that earthquake so violently that the lake itself was splashed within 3 miles outside of its borders, its boundary, its banks, and people the next day could come down and pick up fish by the wagon load that had been left along the banks. And one of the fellows, the young ranch hands that was mentioned in this work, he'd thought out loud how stunning it would have been had a great city been built upon the shores of that lake. Well, there are two great cities built there. One's Fresno, and the other's Bakersfield, and another great city a little bit further south, where Los Angeles. So we live in earthquake country. There's a big one brewing. There's a few things though that people can do. Tens of millions of people each doing little things, keeping track of your earthquake plan, making sure that you do have a family plan, and that it's just, you know, it's so easy to have these things fall away because we have so many things to do in our life. But having maybe your daughter or your son or something be the family's earthquake, give them a little, I was a teacher for 20 years. I know how kids love to be the monitor. Dad, it's time to switch, Dad, it's time to switch the water.
I thought of them as snitches myself.
Oh, God.
Sorry about that.
No, but you know what I mean.
We put
so many things off, and if we had a system where in the meter, I'm asking for a meteorological, a little blurb in the weather page in all the newspapers in California, just letting you know this is whether it's a low seismic probability time or a high seismic probability time, because as the moon and as the sun do their dance in the celestial sky, a few times a year there's going to be a higher probability windows for seismic activity, and to let the tens of millions of people just know that, and each one taking their own individual, maybe somebody's owns a drilling company who's going to be in the San Gabriel Mountains doing something. Maybe he stops work for a couple of hours that morning.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Maybe somebody's got a baby that they've in the bassinet next to a picture window that they never thought about it until they take another look and say, that's not a really good place for the bassinet. There's a window right there. Constantly telling people, no earthquake czar, no heavy-handed government nonsense. Just letting people know you do live in a seismic zone. there's if my theories have been proved, and I want them proved, I want this to go to the governor's desk. We're assuming that I'm correct and accurate, that these windows are more probable. It's just a reminder that, you know, we're all human. We need these reminders, and it runs to the year 2020, and I don't think we're going to need it after 2020 as much as we're going to need it before, because this great quake that's brewing on the southern San Andreas, I've got it. Well, you all, it's not my opinion. The working group of earthquake probability, the seismologists themselves, back in 88, they gave a 50% probability that between 1988 and 2018, this great one would strike on the southern San Andreas. And if you look at the calendar, there's not much room left. That window is fast approaching.
Well, I want to pick up on the idea. There's a phrase that that I've used as kind in a jocular sense as kind of a joke over the years, and that is, gosh, it feels like earthquake weather. Well, I think that perhaps that's something that would be germane now if we did say, well, it is earthquake weather. There is a probability that because of certain aspects of many considerations that the next few days there is a likelihood that there will be an earthquake. And it could be included in some sort of weather forecasting or weather reporting. And so I like that.
Well, in China and in Japan and elsewhere, you're absolutely right. There are the tides themselves are not the only indicator. There has got to be there are dozens of ground-based indicators that the Chinese and the Japanese and the Burmese and the Russians use. Changes in water level and ground level water, anomalous venting of deep earth gases such as radon. The Chinese changes in P wave and S wave velocities on the background mini quakes that take place all the time. And the Chinese employ thousands of people that, as silly as it might seem, observe animals' behavior prior to earthquakes. So there's being employed right now in Asia. There are at least a dozen that we haven't even talked about that are ground based that could be utilized in tandem with what I've written about in forecasting the catastrophe. My idea, though, is that this alone, this advisory, just gives you the times and dates where, if nothing, not knowing anything else, at least you can have a modicum of an idea when at least you might be a little more cautious, when not to find yourself in a downtown elevator in downtown Los Angeles, how to maybe mitigate some things that you might do or not do, or just to at least be aware, to have it in the back of your mind, to have your shoes under the bed at the night before.
It makes
because
great
these
sense.
These quakes take place during the early morning hours, and when we're woozy, we've just been we're not dressed. It's dark. It's a formula for disaster. And there is a large quake brewing on the southern San Andreas.
But and that's true, no, regardless of who you talk to. That's not just you saying that. That's USGS. That's the Office of Emergency Services. It's the fire service. Everyone is saying that. That's a total agreement. Southern California Earthquake Center, it's tracking that kind of stuff. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens to Palm Springs and that whole area down in there, down to Inyo and Imperial, when that thing hits. I do want to put out a website here for USGS. They've got a great publication here that you can download. It has a lot of what you can do type information in it called Putting Down Roots in the Earthquake Country. It's at pubs.usgs.gov. That's pubs.usgs.gov, or I suppose you can just do a Google search, Putting Down Roots in Earthquake Country. And then, of course, for David's book, it's www.earthquakepredictors.com. That's earthquakepredictors.com. And the book itself is available at amazon.com. This has been Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and Richard Dugan working the board for us today. If you have any questions regarding the show, shoot us a call at 964-7194, 964-7194. Give the station a call at 564-1290, that number 564-1290. This is Community Alert, Not If But When, positive preparation for disaster on KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio. Also on the Internet, live, newspress.com. Ted and I will be back with you after these brief announcements.
The views expressed on Community Alert are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or advertisers of this station.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and we're visiting today with David Nabhan, who is the author of Forecasting the Catastrophe, looking at the likelihood of earthquake in certain time periods and time frame. Very interesting.
Now, this is fascinating to me, and I think it's a combination of statistics and the obtaining of a grant or trying to support a theory or a cause by making your evidence form to that. Mm-hmm. It's more of take everything and put it together and see what you have. I look at it as an investigation of sorts. You can go into a crime scene and you can just assume that Chewy did this, this, and this, and then you go look for the evidence to support that Chewy did this, this, and this, where in reality, Chewy wasn't even there.
Right.
Traffic collisions are a great example of where investigators come in and they make broad sweeping assumptions that somebody was driving too fast or whatever, where in fact it was a structural problem or a tire failure or some third issue that comes in that you didn't even think about, and you didn't even take the time to go look. So this is exciting to me that somebody's actually looking at it from the outside, coming back in without the taint of the big grant projects. But along with that thought, I wanted to ask you, Dave, about Tom Jordan. He's a USC professor with Southern California Earthquake Center, and he's taken some exceptions to some of this. He's claiming that there's no evidence that supports that bigger quakes like the one just recently in Baja is impacted by solar system or the waves.
The tidal pull, yeah. I read his I saw the quote and you know it should be juxtaposed by what has been said. If my previous work predicting the next great quake when I came out with that in the late 90s, the answer from the mainstream seismology was more or less balderdash. Dr. Lucy Jones told KNBC News that no one's ever proved anything other than random, and other professors, Robert Geller in Tokyo University, wrote a scathing editorial in the editorial pages of the Los Angeles Times. So, and prior to that, a whole century of no, impossible, no can do. It's amazing that if you keep that in mind, here we are a few years later, and his answer was, instead of balderdash and no can do, it's some studies indicate that tides may have an effect on smaller quakes. So for some reason, somehow magically, the impossibility has vanished, and now it's moved into the negligible, just the small quake range. If that had been the case just a few years ago, they should have said it then. I believe that what's happening is that, like I said last week, when you make the mistake of painting yourself into a corner, and if you're, especially scientifically, if you say that something's impossible, such as those people who said that if God had wanted man to fly, he would have given him wings, they look kind of foolish at 1903 in Kitty Hawk when man took off. And you really wouldn't ask those people what their opinion was about the future of aviation at that point. I'm not saying anything ugly about Mr. Jordan. I'm sure he's an incredibly intelligent fellow with an exalted position as the director of the Southern California Earthquake Center. It's just that I don't know how common sense would it kind of defies common sense for me to imagine that tides would have an effect on producing small quakes and not large quakes. If we want to wait around for another 50 years and wait for a bunch of large quakes to strike to study, maybe in smoldering cities in California we'd be able to then tell the people that, oops, yeah, they do have an effect on large quakes too. And in my book, I've categorized all the large quakes that have struck Southern California, all the big ones. And of all the big ones that have struck over 60 years, half of them took place during these tidal, these thin windows of three-hour dawn and dusk, new and full moon episodes where I don't know. I guess it's just a coincidence, supposedly, but the coincidence causes us to accept outrageously astronomical figures. So with all due respect, I disagree with Mr. Jordan. I'm quite convinced that tides do have a hand in not causing quakes, but triggering quakes on fault lines that are about to burst in any event.
Well, even if he's right and you're wrong, we can't ignore the obvious facts of the data that you've collected, which thereby would support that we should at least be thinking that on specific dates, we need to be much more aware of the potential for an earthquake than on other days, simply because statistically, that's when they're going to hit.
Well, not only that, but I think the fact that because this has emerged and you are bringing this into the light, it's positive in that it will raise the awareness of the public. So the public will think, well, you know, maybe this has some bearing, and we should be getting better prepared at those times. And that is a positive. Even if from now on it doesn't show 50% of the time that it's true, it needs to be put out there so people will be paying more attention.
I think another issue that's worthy of conversation is the fact that it's causing people to at least stop talking and start thinking about earthquakes and the ramifications of significant earthquakes on our society, both economically and physically, and what are we going to do when this big earthquake hits? We can surmise what some of the totality of the damage is going to be, but has anybody really stopped to think about what the impact is on this state when it happens?
Well, I think they have, but I think that it's so incredibly overwhelming that people have a tendency to look away from it rather than to deal with it.
Well, it's like the bad teeth in your mouth. Sooner or later, the teeth win. I mean,
well,
we can't ignore.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Well, it's down to earth analogy, but it's it goes along with my creaking house theory. You know, it's people need to start thinking about these things, because when it hits, it's nobody going to be able to pick up the phone and call somebody, because there isn't going to be anybody there to call.
Mm-hmm.
And the sooner you get engaged and start taking some preventative action, the sooner you can get you and your family back up on your feet and get moving. And depending on the time of day and when this happens, hundreds and thousands of people are going to get impacted.
They are. Well, David, what do you think about the idea of preparation? Do you think that people should be prepared simply to accept the fact that these things are more likely to happen and be more aware of putting the baby next to the plate glass window? Or do you really think that maybe we should go beyond that and be preparing in some physical ways by having some extra food and some fresh water standing by and that sort of thing? How far do you think people should go?
Well, you mentioned that the what the next big one will do, and that they've looked at it, and what the damage estimates would be. I'm looking at USGS's own figures right now for a 7.8 earthquake on the southern San Andreas near those faults that we were talking about, and the numbers are they're looking at injuries in the range of about 50,000 casualties. All the hospitals swamped, approximately 1,800 fatalities. So 50,000 people injured, 2,000 people killed, 1,600 fires raging totally out of control and stretching Southern California's abilities beyond where they could cope. So this scenario, it really is not, it's unacceptable. It's something we're going to have to live with, but it could at least be mitigated.
Mm-hmm.
If we were prepared and if we had some advance warning, both. Instead of 50,000 people injured, 40,000 people injured. Instead of 2,000 people killed, 1,000 people killed. Instead of X billions of dollars in damage, half X billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. I'd go for something like that. And until somebody can come up with something better, I'm proposing that I've got part of the jigsaw puzzle that might be put into place. And you know, time is of the essence. This business has got to be, something need be done soon, or this is all going to be a moot subject anyway. And as far as preparation is concerned, what you guys are doing on the radio and constantly bringing this to the people of Santa Barbara's attention is without a doubt, it's absolutely essential. There's no way that this problem is going to be faced without people constantly keeping in the back of their mind some that there's weekly, monthly, yearly, there's really something they should do. How many people call the engineer out to take a look at the chimney or the foundation? I mean, there's people that do that work in Southern California, and very rarely do you have anybody doing that. I mean, unless you're a contractor or an engineer and you think there's something strange about your house, maybe it should be looked at by a professional. Or how many people have got enough water and food? And how many people know where, how many, here's an interesting one, how many people can swear that every single person in their household knows where the gas cutoff is? Because maybe only the children are going to be around when the earthquake strikes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
How many people have an outside a contact out of state where family members can get together? These are things that will make the difference between 2,000 people killed and, you know, 1,800 people killed. Or if only a dozen people's lives are saved, or 100, that's at least something that we could have done. Humans don't generally just sit on their hands and wait for the end to come. We're a tough breed. I mean, the bubonic plague didn't win. We did. You know, it won the first few rounds, but look where it is now. It's hiding from our antibiotics, eking out a ridiculous living on the steppes of Russia, infecting the odd rat here and there. It almost killed half the population of the world at one time, and if we had just taken the same stance, oh well, we're all going to die, that's not the human way. That's
no.
Not what we do.
Absolutely. Well, we got to take our next break. We're visiting today with author David Nabhan. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the board. Community Alert, not if but when, positive preparation for disaster. KZSB AM 1290, News Press Radio and newspress.com. We'll be back after these announcements.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams and Mike Williams, my co-host, and we're visiting today with David Nabhan, who's the author of Forecasting the Catastrophe, and we've been talking, and this is our second show now, about earthquakes and the possibilities and time frames that they may occur. David, I think that I'd like to touch back with you about some of the ideas that we've discussed in the last a week ago, and that having to do with the way that the alignment of the, and you mentioned the word syzygy, and I think that that word perhaps should be expanded on a bit so that folks have an understanding of what that is.
Syzygy is the longest word in the English language with no vowels in it. It's a scientific word for saying eclipse or eclipse-like or very close to eclipse. So keep in mind that when the, you know, as the moon revolves around the Earth two times a month, it's going to either be directly behind it in line with the sun or directly in front of it, aligned with the sun. And when those three bodies are lined up in one straight line or closely aligned, that's called near syzygy. And when they do align like that, that means that the solar tides, which are constantly pulling on the Earth, are augmented by the lunar tides, which are much stronger. The lunar tides are about twice as strong as the solar tides. So,
because of the proximity of the moon. Yeah. Okay.
Right. During a full or a new moon, you've got triple the pull being brought to bear on the San Andreas at dawn and at dusk. And I went back and I looked at the history of earthquake activity in Southern California. Lo and behold, the great quakes strike right at those times, not all of them, half of them, which is ridiculously beyond the realm of probability. It can't have happened. It is the echo of an underlying cyclical periodicity. Unless you want to accept six out of a quadrillion numbers for just happenstance.
Okay, so but now the rest of them, David, the rest of them, say that 50% of them fall within that parameter, that within that, what are the hour before and the hour following the sun coming up and going down?
4:45 to 7:55 a.m. or p.m.
Okay.
And what are the other ones?
And then the other 50%, we're unable to find any sort of correlation within
completely
that.
Completely random.
And
completely random. So, we're going to need a little bit of luck here too. You know, like I mentioned, the bubonic plague. We humans are going to need a little bit of luck on this. I mean, this is not the be all end all. This is no holy grail for seismology, and I'm not budging or fudging the facts and pretending like this is, you know, whoops, there we go, mm-hmm. problem solved. It's not that way. It's the very early beginning, rudimentary first baby step that we could take toward a seismic warning system, because you're absolutely right. The very next big one might just happen at 10:54 in the morning, right in the middle of no new moon at all. It could, making me look very foolish, but in the long run, over centuries, I don't think I'm going to look foolish. I think that what you said prior, though, about preparation is, that's part of the part of the.
We were talking before during the break about the ramifications of earthquakes around the world, and of course, many of these earthquakes that fall outside of this probability factor that you've been talking about may well have their roots in quakes that occur in other parts of the world, similar to the Haitian quake or some of the large quakes we've had in other places. So that they may precipitate something that would not be predictable or anticipated because simply that they had caused the fluxing of the surface of the Earth with their impact on the other side of the Earth.
Well, that's a plausible theory. You mentioned to me just during the break that these forces are so titanic that they will have changed actually changed the periodicity of the rotation of the Earth. Some of these big ones. I saw the same study you saw mentioned that a great quake such as the ones that took place even go so far as to change the rotation of the Earth, so that they might echo and either change or cause change to be evidenced in far outlying seismic areas. It's certainly within the realm of plausibility as far as I'm concerned.
Well, when we were looking at you gave us last week, I believe, the June 12th, 26th, and August 10th dates for accelerated possibility for quakes. Now, bringing about those dates and how you arrived at those dates was because you looked at the way the alignment of the moon and the Earth were going to be at those times, and the way that they were coming together was going to show us a greater stress level than at other points. Is that correct?
These 12, the 12th and the 26th and the 10th, the sky will look exactly the way it looked when Sylmar took place, when Long Beach was destroyed, when Landers took place, when Big Bear, when the great 52 quake that destroyed Gorman, when Anchorage was destroyed in 64 on Good Friday, the very same face of the sky in the past where these quakes will have been found in the past. I just did the reverse. Anybody can go online, and now it's a lot easier than when I was messing with it in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. You can very easily fast forward the face of the sky to make it look any which way you want, and I specifically wanted it to look how it looked in the past and captured those moments, those hours, where the sun and the moon and the Earth would have been aligned in near syzygy or in perigee, where the moon is even closer, and that's even a more dangerous time insofar as the way I see things. The 10th of August is going to be a perigee event. That means the moon is going to be 10% closer to the Earth, and the lunar tides are going to be about 25% stronger. So,
wow.
For my money, it looks like, those dates we mentioned, what's most probably going to happen is nothing. Probably dawn at those dates are going to be just like any other day in Santa Barbara for.
But it's earthquake weather.
Yeah, true.
That's the way I like to look at it.
Well, it's important that we point out, because we're talking about in very general terms, Santa Barbara is a very seismic area, and what we're talking about definitely impacts on Santa Barbara. And one of the areas that I know that's actually taking this serious is Hollister Ranch, and their new emergency operations plan they're putting together out there includes a lot of preparation for earthquake. They're at the end of two fault lines out there, and they know it, and they've got a pretty good idea what's going to happen. And so they're making plans. plans and preparations for it. Now, that's a private association doing that. And I know Santa Barbara County is also very active in earthquake planning and preparation, as is the city. Goleta also has earthquake preparations because they're looking at some pretty significant problems in Goleta if we have a serious earthquake up here.
Well, I think we're looking at the fact that because of Santa Barbara having the geology and the way that our city is laid out, that we've got three ways into the city, and one of them going over the top of the pass is definitely going to go down. And so
that in the airport, because the airport's going to have some problems. And so for the South County, we got some challenges ahead of us. This is not a joke, and we need to take our next break, which is also not a joke. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and Richard Dugan watching our clock ever so diligently, visiting today with author David Nahum. Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster, KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and on the internet at newspress.com. We'll be back after these announcements.
The views expressed on Community Alert are not necessarily those of the staff, management, ownership, or advertisers of this station.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Community Alert. This is our final segment of the hour. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams. We've been visiting with David Nahum, who is the author of Forecasting the Catastrophe. And this is our second show with David, and it's been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you being with us and sharing your thoughts. I think it's evocative and something that we need to be thinking more about. And we're just going to finish up here. Mike, have you got something you want to
talk? Well, Dave, how do people get a copy of your book, and how do they get a hold of you if they have some specific questions?
Well, in Santa Barbara, it's going to be very easy. The Barnes & Nobles on State Street should have it, if not now, by the time this airs, very soon thereafter. Or you can order it on barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com. It's called Forecasting the Catastrophe, and it's got the 181 times and dates from now until the year 2020 when one might keep an eye on the calendar to expect an elevated possibility for earthquake activity on the West Coast. And if you want to, anybody listening out there wants to drop me a line or a suggestion, comment, complaint, or some kind of add something to the debate, you can go to my website at www.earthquakepredictors.com and go to the contact page, and I'd love to hear from everyone in Santa Barbara. And lastly, I don't want to monopolize the conversation, but I do want to mention, if the people of Santa Barbara feel within their power to drop an email to the governor, I ask the people in San Francisco to do the same. I'm not kidding. I want this matter brought to the governor's desk. If you'd be so kind as to let Mr. Schwarzenegger know that you heard me, that you think that this is a matter that for him to impanel a blue ribbon group to see just how accurate I am or inaccurate, that the people of California might benefit from this.
Do you have a summary position paper on this topic that people can look at, or do they need to get the book specifically?
You know, I'm going as fast as I can, and that is the very next thing on my agenda. And that, you know, that's a good point. This should not be a one-man, this shouldn't be a one-man job. There should be, this is a matter important enough to where, it should be taken out of my hands, just some guy doing this, and placed in a more objective realm.
I think it may well be once your book comes out that you're going to find that they're going to have adherents that are going to be really happy to carry this forward.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things we've learned in this show is that fires, earthquakes, pandemics, tidal problems, and whatever here in Santa Barbara, flooding, you inundate everybody with all this information, and eventually it becomes saturated. And we're trying to get it focused into what's important and what you actually have some control over and what you can do something about and what you're just going to have to accept and move on.
Yeah. Yep.
It's challenging. Any last closing thoughts as the clock ticks down to zero?
Well, I just would hope that, as I said, this is a lot of fun. It's been it's great talking to it's an incredible honor to be able to speak to great cities like San Francisco and Santa Barbara, and of course there's no crime in selling a book, and all that stuff is great. Honestly, though, I'm not after that. I'm retired. I have all the money I need. I live a very Spartan life. I'm a retired school teacher. I have a great life as it is. I'm very interested in seeing that this turns into something that it should be. You know, James Russell Lowell said that the greatest homage we can pay to the truth is to use it. And I think this is true, and I want it used. That's the long and the short of it. And I want to thank you guys for giving me the voice to speak to my fellow citizens out there on the West Coast, and I hope they can recognize the ring of plausibility in these couple hours that we've had together.
Very good, David. And the ring of truth here at KZSB AM 1290 is we're completely out of time. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, and Richard Dugan, Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. We'll see you next week.
This has been Community Alert, produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, in association with the Santa Barbara County Fire Safe Council. Community Alert is proud to be part of the Orpala Fund Initiative, Aware and Prepare, a community partnership to strengthen emergency and disaster readiness. If you would like to help support the program, you may send your tax-deductible donations to the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. That's the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. Comments regarding this Community Alert program may be sent online to community@wildlandresidents.org. That's community@wildlandresidents.org. Or you may call 964-7194. That's 964-7194. Production assistance for Community Alert is provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when disaster strikes.